Hi, I'm Jason Wacob, founder and co-CEO of MindBodyGreen, and your host for the MindBodyGreen podcast, where I'll be bringing you deep and insightful dialogues with some of the greatest minds in wellness. If you like what you hear, please consider giving us a 5-star review and comment. And don't forget to visit us at MindBodyGreen.com for your daily dose of wellness, and make sure to check out all of our great offerings, including our online classes and trainings. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Jason Wacob, founder and CEO of MindBodyGreen, the best-selling author of Wealth, and your host for the MindBodyGreen podcast, where I'll be bringing you deep and insightful dialogues with some of the greatest minds in wellness. If you like what you hear, please give us a 5-star review, comment, and share with your friends and family. And don't forget to visit us at MindBodyGreen.com for your daily dose of wellness. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Sophie Tucker is an electronic musical duo based in Los Angeles consisting of Sophie Holly Weld and Tucker Halpern. They're probably best known for their song Best Friend, which was featured in a commercial during Apple's unveiling of the iPhone X, as well as their 2017 Grammy-nominated song Drinky. In 2018, their album Treehouse was nominated for a Grammy for Best Dance Electronic Album as well. So, with that being said, you're probably very familiar with their music, but you're probably not familiar with their passion for wellness, which we will dive into today. Sophie, Tucker, welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
Hey.
It is so great to have you guys here. So this is going to be unlike most interviews you do, where we're going to talk about wellness. So
Sophie's favorite topic.
Sophie's favorite topic. And played a role with you as well.
Yeah.
So let's start with both of your individual wellness journeys and what that looked like. And so I know, Tucker, you also played basketball at Brown, suffered from chronic fatigue, and then talk a little bit about that first. And
so I always had sort of some irregularities and inflammation in my joints and stuff leading up to when I got extra sick my junior year. I was going back, I was actually the captain of the team. I was, you know, my whole life was just basketball, and I'd been working towards being a professional for a long time, and, you know, it was looking like, you know, it was great. Things were really
good. You were pretty good. I did some research. You were really good.
Things were good. And then I got mono in, like, October of my junior year and got really sick. They have a really bad rule. There's a lot of bad NCAA rules, but there's a bad rule in the Ivy League especially that you can't play your first – you have to play your 4 years of eligibility in the first 8 semesters. So if I took a semester off because I was sick, I couldn't add an extra semester of basketball. Like, I would be from when you started. You have to play your 4 years. And because I was really just focusing on basketball at the time, I withdrew from school before finishing my first semester that year so that I could have a year back of eligibility, even if I ended up going somewhere else for a year of playing. But anyway, I didn't get better. I got mono, got really sick, was bedridden for about 7 or 8 months, and in and out of doctors, came to New York a lot. My home was Boston, and I was at school in Providence, and was sort of just looking for any reason why I was still so sick. And ended up, there was my immune system didn't create the right, like, antibody to make the Epstein-Barr virus dormant, because once you have mono, you keep it forever. And so it was just constantly going, and I took some crazy cycle of medication to make it dormant from medical, using medicine.
Sure.
And then I sort of got better. I went back to Brown the next year, sort of redid my junior year, tried to play this final year, or it was my junior year again, so my third year, played through the season, but was having really, really tough inflammation issues and really bad just health. I just couldn't do it. My body couldn't really hold up anymore. And I was slowly getting back, and then I'd, you know, take 5 steps backwards and slowly get better and take 5 steps back. And then the summer before my senior year, I was actually working out with some of the Celtics guys at the Celtics facility in Boston, and I was, like, playing really well, feeling really good. And then every couple of weeks, I'd have this like horrible, horrible pain, and I'd have to sit in an ice bath. Like I wouldn't be able to walk for a day or two, and I had like this crazy joint acute inflammation. And the doctor finally said, after like three times every couple of weeks that happened, he said, "You have to stop. Your body just can't handle it anymore. Like, we don't even really know why. You just can't do it." So then that was when I didn't like believe it at first, because as you, I'm sure you know, like, I guess I don't know much about your basketball career.
I wasn't as good as you.
Well, it was, yeah, I'm sure, I don't know. It was just like my life, you know,
whether,
no matter how good I was, it was more my mindset. Just like, I wanted to see how good I could possibly get. And I was sort of obsessed with that. And, I ended up having to stop, and I turned to music. When I was out for the year in bed, I like started, using my computer and like learning how to make music, just watching YouTube tutorials and stuff. And that's sort of what got me through that time without getting too sad and depressed that I was missing my life and everyone else was still going, you know? and then I had one more year of school, and I said, I want to try to make music somehow into a career. I have a year to do it. And I like frantically just started making music. I started DJing parties and just working all the focus I had in basketball, I just put into music stuff.
And Sophie, what about you and your journey to wellness and how you guys met at Brown?
It's hard to pinpoint exactly when it started, but I think probably it was in college. I kind of beat up my body emotionally, physically, mentally in high school. I was living in boarding school and I didn't know what I was doing. And I was staying up too late and eating all the wrong foods and drinking too much. And I was living in Italy, so that's why. and then someone very, very close to me was diagnosed with bipolar. And I quickly experienced just the fragility of human being, and also the impact of very like daily life choices on that fragility. And so that's really like, I got into yoga, and that was kind of my first thing. And I realized that like really small things every day have a huge impact on how I'm feeling, and I am extremely sensitive. And so I was just kind of like playing around with certain things and noticing how different I felt, and noticing, you know, how much more stable I felt when I was making certain decisions. And so it became increasingly important in my life. And in yoga, I did a teacher training, and one of the precepts was like not eating meat. So that was like an experiment to see how that felt. And like, that felt great. And then, you know, the experiment is like, okay, be as conscious as you can be. And that felt really great. And that sort of led to sobriety. And then that led to, you know, meditation and all sorts of things just like started unfolding. And then, so it's been like a very passionate thing for me since college. And just like a constant experimentation of like how good I can feel, but also because I'm so sensitive, and because I've really experienced just the dark side of mental health.
Sure.
I've seen like where I don't want to go. And I think that that's where my passion really comes from. So yeah, it's been a really long journey, and touring has kind of brought a whole new like passion to it and a whole new side of things, because it's a really, really weird lifestyle. And we have to come up with ways to cope with it, because it, you know, the ways that most people know about are really self-destructive. And it's been a really interesting path trying to carve out like how we can take care of ourselves mentally, physically, emotionally, all the ways while touring.
How do you guys do that? And you mentioned mental health, and a lot of people, it's an important subject. I too have seen the dark side of that, and I've seen friends decline and lost friends, and it's tough. And you know, people tend to think of like being musicians and being stars, if you will, and touring all over the place. They think of drugs and booze and all things that aren't good for mental health and wellness. So like, how do you guys think about that tension and expectations and being conscious as performers? You know, some performers will also say like, I do my best work, you know, when I'm out of my mind or I'm high, and the people will say that. So how do you just think about that? How do you guys stay well?
I think first of all, we've had to figure it out sort mm-hmm. of for ourselves from the beginning. I also think one way a lot of people, I think, stay healthy is like routines, and we don't have the luxury
of routines.
Of having yeah. any type of routine whatsoever. Like I go to the airport tonight at 3:30 a.m. and like we have a show at 11:30 tonight p.m. Yeah. So I basically just miss a night of sleep tonight, and it's really hard to figure out how to take care of yourself when that happens often. And I think it's good. We started as we both weren't crazy. Like we both
speak for yourselves.
No, different crazy. We're totally crazy. But we both weren't like huge drinkers,
yeah.
huge drug takers, not anything like that. And I just think that was like, luckily,
early on, I think we experimented. Like I remember being in the studio and like we got high and we didn't get any work done. It sucked. We hated
Did
it.
Did I?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah, really early in our careers,
really
like in New York.
Memory.
But yeah, we experimented with things and we were like, that doesn't feel good.
Yeah,
that's not sustainable, or, you know. And I think especially that we make dance music. So we're in the club. We're yep. out late. And most people around us, I would say, are on something. And I think most people around us think we're on a lot of things because we're crazy. But the reality is we're pretty much both always sober.
Yeah. I'll have a drink every now and then, but we're pretty sober. I mean, also, we count on each other to, like, yeah. wake up the next day and be at a radio interview or on stage somewhere or at the airport. And I think it would be a lot harder for both of us to deal with the other person if they were hungover or coming yeah. down or something like that. And I think one, we take it really seriously, and we both feel really lucky and grateful to be able to live this life and do what we love doing so much that we're constantly like, let's not screw this up, you know, for each
yeah.
other
yeah.
and for ourselves, because it's, you know, it's sort of a one in a million sort of thing. And, you know, we work absolutely as hard as we can, but also, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of really talented people who work really hard who don't get the same opportunities.
Yeah.
So I think one, we just don't take it for granted. It's not, you know, that just is.
Yeah, like before shows, I think people are shocked. Like we've had a couple artists come into our green room and they're like, wait, what? This is what you guys do? Like
yeah.
we foam roll, we do a little workout, we
hydrate. We like get a sweat.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like preparing for a game,
right.
you know?
Sure.
We like mentally prepare.
And they're like, wait, you're what?
So what's in there? I love you have a foam roller in the green room.
Oh yeah.
I have a Theragun at all times.
Yeah.
It's just so loud.
It's funny.
But I didn't bring it. I have it in my bag. I use it
yeah,
every
great.
Day.
Do yeah. people, when you bring that through airport security, they're like, what the hell is
this?
I
always check it because okay. I'm too nervous to take anything that has the word gun in it. Seems
sure.
like a
it's
bad
true.
Idea. To
the things that are like in our green room are like the Theragun and the Nutribullet. So we were like making
yeah.
smoothies. Like
yeah, usually riders consist of like a bunch
frozen
of
fruit.
Bottles of Grey Goose and like maybe drugs or
oh,
something.
Yeah.
Right, M&Ms. Like
yeah.
the infamous riders
right.
that show up in a
just
smoking
one
gun.
Color M&M.
Yeah, who was that? I forget who that was. One color M&M, like, you know, orange juice.
Who was it?
The other
like
thing
Jack
that
White
I would say also is like our goal is to connect with people. And we've kind of clarified over the course of, you know, the last couple of years touring that what we really want to do is arrive in a place and feel super connected to everyone in the room and have them just feel like you know, in love with themselves and in love with everybody in the room, and, you know, just have that kind of like really cathartic, you know, ecstatic feeling. Yeah. And if that's coming from a place of like kind of being not there, and like, I just don't think that it would come across as authentically, at least, you know, for,
yeah, for what we do, for the music we make and for the kind of people we are, I think like being present and being there with, whether it's
even
a
with
club
each other,
of 500 or if there's 40,000 people in a field, if we can make it feel like we're really all connecting and we're all on the same level, like we never play completely in the dark backlit or anything. We like want people to be able to look at us and we look at them. And it's like, you know, even if you're looking at a Jumbotron screen or something, I guess, but we still want them to feel it. And we have so much fun and we want them to see us having so much fun, because that's one, something we didn't see that much when we were just starting and we were trying to figure out who we are as a band and what, you know, what defines us compared to any other band or something, or DJ group or whatever we are. We're kind of a weird mix of electronic music and live band. But the first show we ever played, actually, we were like kind of, it was a bunch of smoke and it was dark and backlit and we were trying to play it cool. And like, you know, we got off stage. I think Sophie cried.
Yeah, I was like, I hate this.
We also played for like five people in Brooklyn at Baby's All Right. And it was like we were first of three for Togi Monster.
We were trying to be mysterious.
Yeah, and we thought we were going to be this like mysterious electronic band, which is like kind of
like Daft Punk.
The norm. Well, yeah.
Well, it's kind of what we knew and what we had seen.
Yeah. And we thought it was like cool, you know, like we lived in New York and I wore all black and we were like, and we got off stage and we were like, that wasn't fun at all. Like we were holding back from getting excited because we were trying to like look cool. And so then we quickly realized, let's just like let ourselves get excitable. That's who we are. We get hyped up, you know, if we look dumb, we look dumb, but we're going to have fun, you know? And then that sort of became way more us and felt better, and I think made people more comfortable to feel crazy and like themselves too.
But you mentioned like this idea of connecting with the crowd and feeling the crowd, and inherently like my thought on like drugs, alcohol, and you know, I'm not innocent, I'm not prude. Drugs, when you go too far on that stuff, it like takes you outside of yourself. It's versus when you're trying to be like conscious and really connect, it's about like going inside. It's like going within and connecting. And it's hard to do that. I feel like when you do it with drugs or alcohol excessively, it takes you out. It's almost numbing. It takes you outside. It's like, it's almost like a bad shortcut, which is not. And people will still walk away with that feeling of like, oh, connection. But in reality, when you're able to do that without all that stuff, it's much more powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to even know, because I have kind of three modes of being I was describing the other day. Like there's presence, and then there's like focus on like a thought or an idea or something that I have to get done. And then there's this third category, which is just kind of somewhere. And I don't know where I am, but I'm like floating somewhere dreaming. And I'm not even aware that I'm doing it.
I'm aware she's doing
it. Yeah. I just kind of like go somewhere and I don't know where I'm going, but that is really hard. It's hard to perform in that state.
Sure, sure.
So I don't want to get any further from the earth than I already am.
So you mentioned yoga, and we got introduced by one of our dear friends, Tara Stiles. Like what practices do you guys do? I know it's very hard to have a routine, but like what do you guys do when you can to help you be your best, to feel good, to feel well and doing what you do?
Yeah, I have like 1,001 things, because I think I just try to impose structure as much as I can, because we don't really have much structure. So like I chug a certain amount of water every day. I practice yoga. I actually practice Strala, which is Tara's style of yoga, which I really like. It's very like free. It's not very rigid, and it's just a nice thing to do like after a plane flight. I meditate. I do Vipassana meditation, not as frequently as Vipassana recommends, but I do.
You did a 10-day retreat, though. That's serious business right there.
Yeah, it was serious business.
She was trying to fit that into the schedule for like 2 years.
Yeah, it's true. And then he was like, I think I was trying to do it right when we started the band. And yeah. It was kind of like, are you really going to go take 10 days now?
Yeah,
like,
we're just starting to build momentum. For like an hour.
Yeah.
It was
really hard not to talk and not to do our business. I had to schedule it like a year in advance. And everyone knew like that 10 days was, you know, no one could reach me. And so we had to kind of prepare a whole year so that that could happen. So it was really like sacred time. I was like, take advantage of this.
And what about you, Tucker?
I'm a little different, I think. I think also one thing Sophie didn't mention is she needs her like alone time,
yeah.
Which I think is a big part of her wellness and her process of being healthy. And it's a lot different than mine. I like to be surrounded by people and energy all the time. Well, when it's good energy. I'm like a real believer in morale and positivity. And
I think almost the biggest thing that we really do. I mean, we're so like diligent about keeping good energy around us and having good energy around us and putting off good energy.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important things. I mean, that's what I was saying. I think it's probably one of the most important things to my well-being, mentally and physically even, is just being positive, sort of encouraging the people around us and the people around me and, feeding off of good energy and feeding good energy. And I don't get to work out physically like I used to ever since I got sick. Actually, I still have sort of been battling chronic fatigue and inflammation in my joints and stuff. And I actually just recently, for the first time in about 5 years, started trying again to get to the bottom of it with a really cool sort of test thing that I just got into in San Francisco with some doctors who do some alternative stuff with chronic fatigue syndrome. So I'm excited about that. I'd love to be able to play basketball. I really would love to go play in a pickup game. I can like shoot, but I can't really jump shoot. You know, I can
horse. Perfect
for
horse.
I can form shoot. You know?
Play horse.
Yeah. Yeah. I could horse. I can shoot still, but I'd love to be able to play. I'd love to do more than I do. I do band work and, get my heart rate going and get a sweat going before our live show. And then our actual show, we both go pretty crazy. And I end up with a full shirt of sweat every show. If I don't, it wasn't a great one.
So you guys mentioned energy and the importance of energy. Like, what do you guys look out for? Like, what's a sign of like bad energy where you're just like, need to get away, energy vampire, out of here? Like, do you think because of what you do, you're more attuned to it?
I think just based on who we are as people, we've always been attuned to it, and it's always been really important to us. But also we're surrounded by people all the time. So I think...
Well, when you're we live with a nucleus of people, and like we're often on a bus, so we're like 7 to 10 people or 8 to 11 people sleeping within 20 feet of each other. And so when you're that tightly around people, if one person, it's just hard not to notice. And I think I sort of take on the role in our
morale coordinator
world, in our little, traveling world of just making sure everyone is okay and like feeling good. And it's exhausting when it gets me too exhausted, honestly, to do our job well when there's someone who I have to like always go try to make sure is being positive and feeling good. So someone who's just really,
yeah,
someone
no,
who's
totally.
Like
I'm nodding in approval.
A generally down person it's really hard for us to do our job right, honestly.
And I mean, it's not that we're not tolerant of like people who deal with depression or people who like are,
we've all dealt with stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we really
have.
That's
why it's so important to us.
Yeah. And it's also like, I think the thing that really gets us down. And I think the thing that you are referring to especially is when people aren't treating other people right, or they're treating other people unfairly, especially like within our nucleus. Like that's always been a real, you know, deal breaker.
I just think that's sort of part of keeping the health and wellness definitely. In this weird world that we like exist in.
And it's really, I think the other really important, we've kind of touched on this thing that we sort of like ask of everybody around us. And I think we hold ourselves to a high standard is being really uplifting of other people's like success or, you know, everybody's good fortune is everybody else's good fortune and is never a competition, is never going to bring anybody else down. And we live in a world that could be competitive or could be...
Well, it is competitive.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be. Like, it doesn't have to be vicious and it doesn't have to be comparative.
Yeah,
that's really important. One of the things,
I think what you're getting at is one of the things that's really hard specifically is when there's sort of like an ugly jealousy or envy. You know, someone's insecurity is kind of coming to the surface and being negative about other people or other artists. That is just not something we like to be around because, one, it's really hard to put yourself out there. And, you know, I'm sure we've all been the person or the people that other people are saying negative things about, and it feels horrible. So I've had to catch myself from being too competitive because I'm come from like such a sports family, super competitive.
You want
to
win.
I absolutely always want to win. Like when we were going into the Grammys this past year, I was like, I want to win.
Of course.
Is it wrong? Everyone's always like, no, like, you know, we're all winners. We're all nominated. Like, no, I wanted to win. And I think that's fine. Or that's just how I am. That's how I'm going to be. But you know, there's a difference between being competitive and not, you know, respecting everyone you're up against or not even up against. Honestly, the cool thing about music is I used to say this when we first started. I was like, I feel like we have a game whenever we have a show, but you could win every game, you know, like there's no other team trying to make you lose.
Yeah, it's just everyone's rooting for you in the audience.
Right. Unless, yeah, pretty much.
And we recently started an artist collective called Animal Talk. And the whole ethos behind Animal Talk is just artists supporting artists and artists lifting each other up and empowering each other. Because I think there's a lot of, you know, you hear about it like in the media, like artists trying to tear each other down or compare each other to each other or whatever. And the other thing is there's obviously this narrative of the very destructive artist. And what's interesting to us is kind of starting a whole movement of people who are all trying to take care of themselves and trying to take care of each other and like sharing wisdom and best practices and like what is working and what isn't working on the road and being able to talk to somebody who also lives on the road, who's also going through similar things.
We met a group in Paris at our show. They were the one, they came in before we were getting ready for our show. And they were like, you know, do you want a wine or beer or whatever? And we're like, no, like we're going to work out and stuff. And they like really didn't understand. Like, and the French culture is a little different.
They looked at each other. They're like, wait, we could do that?
They actually said that, I think. They were like, wait, you mean you don't drink...
Before a show.
Like, they're like, we didn't think that was even an option. I don't know. It's like dance music also. And they were like, we never even considered
they're
that
like, when we get off tour, we have to rest for 3 months.
Yeah, like we could go to these events and go to these press things and play these clubs and not drink. Like, that's an option. And we kind of looked at each other and we're like, this is blowing our minds because, like, of course that's an option. You can do whatever you want. But they actually didn't even consider it.
And when we were starting and we were opening up our bands, we didn't see anybody like that either.
What, being healthy?
Yeah, no way.
Yeah, there wasn't that much healthiness going on. Well, yeah. Not all complete destruction. But
no, not complete destruction either. But first of all, most people within like the touring world don't know that much about. And then people outside of the touring world, I think that artists are all kind of like doing whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like, how do you do it? You're like, it's really hard and it takes a lot of work and you have to be really intentional about it.
Sure. Well, if you think about wellness in general, it's so much about routine.
Right.
And like, you know, sleep, food, like meal, schedule, like, you know, like you got a kitchen, you can go grocery shopping, you have a restaurant, like it's routine, routine, routine. And music inherently with touring is like the unroutine. And you have like these ups and downs and ups and you're traveling and it's just like, it's like a routine break. Like the only routine is you're going to go up and perform.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And like, how do you... Like, it's hard.
And have a crazy amount of adrenaline at 2 a.m. when you're finished.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's another thing. Like, you know, I remember there was an interview. I think I've mentioned this in the podcast. There was an interview with Michael Stipe from like years ago. And he was saying how after a tour, he like couldn't hang out with people. Mm. He said he would go to dinner with friends and he would just be like, these people, like, he's like, I couldn't participate in the conversation. I was just like mad. I'm like, this is boring. I can't be here. And then after like talking to a therapist or something, they were like, no, like the problem's you. Like he discovered he needed like serious time after a big tour to like just calm down and not do anything to like be normal, because he was just running at adrenaline. And just, so how do you do that, especially with your music, what you do, that energy? Like, how do you do that? Like, how do you get to sleep? How do you balance that? How do you, or is it?
It's interesting. It's also interesting because we have such different tech.
Yeah.
We have such different answers for that,
yeah,
for what works for us. Yours is more intentional and interesting. So you can say yours first.
I mean, yeah, first of all, I'd say it's really hard. Like the first couple years of touring, I just really struggled. I would sleep poorly and I slept maybe a couple hours and then I'd wake up and then eat breakfast at a kind of regular time and then go back to bed and then not really see the sunlight all day and then just feel really confused and then kind of like emotionally all over the place because of my sleep schedule. And I remember our manager just being like, it's totally normal. Like, you get off tour and it's like weird and you're experiencing that for the first time. And I was like, but there's no way. Like, I refuse to feel like this. I want to keep touring. Like, I don't want this experience. So I experimented a lot, and meditation's a big part of it. Meditating before the show is really helpful for like the kind of high that I get on, and then meditating after the show. But even better than meditating is a bath. That's the best thing I've ever experienced, because it immediately like zaps my adrenaline. And then sometimes when we play a really crazy show, like, I fall asleep right away because it's just been such a good workout. But then, like, you know, last weekend we played two really, really like intense physical shows, and I for the past like 3 or 4 days, like, I kind of felt like shit. I was like, didn't really have much energy, and it is what it is, you know. Like, the other part of it, and I think the other part of meditation, is just learning to be okay with not having that much energy and like not being like, that's bad, make it go away, which is my instinct. It's to just like feel really uncomfortable with tiredness. Mm-hmm. So just like kind of learning to be a little more equanimous towards like the not so good physical feelings. But yeah, a bath is like, if there's a bathtub, then I'm set. I can go to bed.
But we don't have a bath a lot.
Usually we don't. No, but like, I'll sit under the hot shower. Sometimes that'll help. I also, like, I turn my phone on airplane mode, and I journal. But, so, you know, it's still a process. Like, I'm still experimenting and learning.
It was really annoying when we used to share rooms on tour, and we'd get back to the hotel, and she'd have, like, a two-hour, like, wind-down routine. Where she would do, like, all these things, and like wouldn't even like want me to have the TV on mute because she's trying to like get her eyes ready to sleep and like all this crazy stuff. And I still don't really relate to that at all. I kind of just like work till I fall asleep, and I just fall asleep. like with, I'll like fall asleep with like my clothes on and just be like, right. So I just like go and go and go and go until I just crash.
So we're so different.
And it works. Well, it works for me.
So you mentioned like used to sharing rooms. So you guys aren't a couple. You're not married.
No.
But you're collaborators and you're with each other like all the time.
Yeah.
How do you manage that? And that can be difficult.
Yeah.
We're good.
It's really interesting. When we started the band, or when we met and started making music, we weren't even really friends. It was our senior year at Brown. She was like an acoustic bossa nova musician. I was like a DJ, like house music. And I thought what she was doing was really interesting, but really boring and slow. So I was like, can we, you know, like maybe work together and make something interesting here? And we sort of slowly became friends, but like very slowly. Really, music came first. We basically moved to New York to pursue this before we really knew each other very well. And it sort of took both of us having to go through health issues and really relating about it.
Wait, so I broke my toes right after we moved to New York.
Stress fractures,
ooh. Yeah. And I had to live in a wheelchair for 4 months.
Oh, my God.
And so I was actually in the Netherlands, which is where my parents were living, in a wheelchair. And at this time, we hadn't even started the band yet. We knew we wanted to start the band.
Well, we had our Tucker first EP finished, mm-hmm. and we were about to start it. And then she had to go take care of her health before we started the band. And so she basically went through what I had gone through 2.5 years earlier when I left school and was in bed for, I guess, like 8 months. Mm. And we really got to know each other then, ironically, when we were not in the same place. And we FaceTimed like all day, every day, working on music and kind of just talking and, you know, keeping her sane through that tough time moving home at that. It's just hard. And not being able to, it was like a 4-story walk up and yeah. you're like in a wheelchair. That was the whole thing. That was horrible. Yeah. But then we became close and we're so different. We like had no overlap. Brown's not that big of a school, like 5,000 something undergrad. And we'd never even seen each other. We were living on such different planets at school and in general. And so when we have a couple mutual friends who we figured out after the fact, and they, when it was all sort of starting up, they were like,
what?
How are you guys friends? Like, how is
this? We're like, we're not. We don't really get it.
Yeah, we're not really friends. we like what we create together. And I think us being so different from each other, one is why I think what we create is like interesting and exciting to me. And also I think that's why we don't really get sick of each other, because we're together all the time. Yeah. But we're like so different that yeah. it like doesn't get annoying for some, you know. I mean, we'll bicker at each other when we haven't slept in a day or two, but it's never been a problem.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier, like, you know, times like being down, like what was that like? How'd you get out of the rut?
Well, I guess there's like a lot of different types of being down. I mean, I'm in terms of touring.
Yeah. And just like being down, like you talked yeah. about like mental health, like it's tough. I have tremendous respect for what you do and it's grueling. And there's like this, to me, like there's this tension of being so connected to everyone and then you're mm-hmm. alone and then back and forth. And it's like up and down and up and down. And it could take a toll
yeah.
on people. And sometimes just like, I can't, it could take a toll on people.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I sort of said earlier, like I'm a very sensitive person and I can go pretty up and down even without touring. Like I'm very porous and I sometimes have trouble like with any boundaries, like
sure.
when I'm interacting in the world, like it's just straight through and then it affects me all day. And I think I just naturally emotionally go up and down, and touring definitely exacerbates it. Like it just makes the highs even higher and the lows lower. But I think that the lows don't, I've just learned about them. Like I cry a lot, but I now know that it's not like real deep sadness. It's like it's just tenderness, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I get to a point, like I remember 2 weeks ago, we had just filmed these crazy videos and we were up like, you know, grinding like 4 a.m. wake ups, 12-hour shoots. Like it was crazy, physically demanding. And then the week after, like I was like, anything could make me cry. And I'm also, you know, hormonal and a woman. And like, I think I just maybe developed a sense of humor about it. Or like, I can call Tucker and he's like, yep, you know, like that's her. And it's almost like a respect in a way, even though it's kind of a joke. It's like, I respect the way that I am, which is like, I am this like kind of emotional, sensitive being, and I know it'll end like when I'm sad, and I know that it's not that serious. Like
in those situations, though, especially, you're so exhausted,
yeah,
and you're so overtired.
Oh yeah,
that's just your process.
Yeah,
that's how you deal with that.
And but then I guess what I'm saying is, rather than being like, oh my God, I'm so like, I think even before I would think that whatever the thing that I thought I was upset about was like a real thing. And I think I'm getting better at being like, nope, I'm just going through like an adrenaline crash right now. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. And like the thing that I'm fussing about or the thing that I think I'm upset about, I'm not really that upset about it. I'm just kind of like attaching my, you know, ups and downs to like the present moment, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So it's kind of like, being a little bit more removed from the ebb and flow of my emotional being. Yeah, well, I'm not always zen, but I think I'm definitely better than I was when we started the band at
we've had to learn
just riding the wave,
quickly.
You know, not like getting so worried about it staying forever or it being like a really big deal. We have had to learn pretty quickly like how to just go with the adrenaline and the crashes and the adrenaline and the crashes, and in a way just like be at peace with it and enjoy it, because it's so fun. We have the best life ever. It's
also,
so fun.
It's also personal. I think like I have a really different experience than Sophie with a lot of that, and I'm not as emotional. I think I can get in a sort of crabby mood or a little upset when I'm feeling physically really bad because I'm worried that it won't get better. Like when I was really sick for a long time, I think that always stresses me out. So then that'll like come out. But in general, I think another reason why we're good partners is that I'm pretty non-emotional.
Yeah.
You know, probably sometimes to a fault, but because I'll just be like, you know, suck it up. We got work to do. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
And she responds way better to that now than she did at first.
Yeah. I was like before, like, you cold-hearted.
Yeah. But I think, you know, that's part of the reason we can exist and, you know,
but yeah, and
well.
I think there is a high level of respect. Like you're just like, oh, Sophie's doing her thing. And that's like awesome. And that's who she is.
Yeah, I wouldn't say awesome, but I'd say it's necessary for her because, you know, I respect her and I think she's great and I think she's, you know, amazing and her, you know, talented, and if she needs to do what she needs to do to be there all the times we need her to be there, which is often, then, you know, she can have that.
Acceptance and respect.
Yeah, and fun. I mean, we have so much fun.
Yeah.
So how do you guys think about the creative process, and like, how do you get you know, a lot of people have different thoughts, you know, very different from being an athlete where it's like, you know, there is no creative process. You do the work and you do the
right.
and that's it. But like, how do you think about that, and how do you get ready? Like when you're about to do a new album, you're about to go on tour, like what does that look like for you?
I think Tucker brings a lot of the athlete mindset into our creative process, which I think is awesome.
Yeah. Like, you'd be shocked how much it is the same. Like, obviously, playing basketball is not as creative. Well, I think you can actually be very creative when you're like playing basketball. If you watch like Luka Doncic, is like he's an artist out there. You know, Larry Bird was an artist.
Luka, are you listening?
Yeah. I found it. A lot of people who are musicians or artists were not athletes, and they didn't learn some of the things that I learned, like having a grown man scream in my face, you know, and like one, to not get riled up about stuff. You just have to like not let it affect you, and like, you know, crazy stuff like that. Like what other scenario in the whole world is it like, I guess maybe the military, to have like a grown man in your face, like spitting, screaming at you, like he's gonna like hit you. It's like, you can't do that in real life.
In front of lots of people, too.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I've experienced that.
Right. That, think about it. That doesn't happen in the real world. That doesn't happen at normal jobs. You get fired. You can't do that. That's not allowed. So like, not, and I think that's just a small piece of it, but like stuff like that, one, I've realized that Sophie, for instance, I mean, she was a good soccer player, but I still think is a little different, like the college level. She didn't experience some of those things, or, you know, having to wake up at 4 a.m. and run stadiums and then go lift and then go to breakfast and then go to class and then go back to practice and then ice bath for an hour and then go to sleep. And like, these are like, so when we're in the studio and we're getting a little tired at first, she was like, okay, I'm tired. Like, I want to go home. And I was like, what? You're tired? Who cares? I don't care if you're tired. And I don't think that's how a lot of like artists or musicians approach things. And I learned quickly that it wasn't. And I think we learned quickly that that can be an advantage for us, and that we can like, we can work harder and push ourselves harder. And, you know, when you have to just wake up like a zombie, get in a car, go to the airport, walk through security, that at 4 a.m., that's easier than waking up, going to the gym, changing, running up stadiums while a grown man yells in your face. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, we can do it, you know? It's like, there's worse things. Obviously,
Tucker's like my coach.
You can go to war. Like, obviously, there's worse things. There's always worse things.
Sure.
But just the mindset of, and I think I even, you know, I took it too far. The first year we were really touring last year, I was just like, let's say yes to everything. You can do it. You can do more than your body thinks you can do. Like, let's go play on this side of the world and then this side of the world the next day. And like, we need to grow our, you know. That my mindset was like, we need to, you know, put the footwork in, grow our fan base, connect with all these people all over the world so we can get bigger and, you know, so we can do it. And that's true to an extent, but it's also, you know, not the healthiest thing. So I think I also had to tone it down a little.
Yeah. We've kind of met in the middle.
Yeah.
I've definitely gotten much stronger because of Tucker and just his belief that we can do more than we think we can. And then I also think you've gotten healthier.
I've gotten so much healthier. Oddly enough, like back when I was going through all my health things, nutrition wasn't that big of a part of it. It wasn't, I saw so many specialists from like every strange medical genre that there is. And not a nutritionist, oddly enough.
Sure.
And Sophie's been a really good influence on my just being healthier. And it does make me feel better. It's not like the absolute root of my issues, but it does help. And it helps us to be more sustainable. And I think, interestingly, you know, when we were playing, it was just like carbo load. I was just trying not to lose weight.
Gatorade and right. Fried chicken and
right.
All the...
I still like Gatorade, but yeah. But no fried chicken anymore.
No, I played, it was a lot longer. Like, there was, nutrition was like nothing.
Yeah.
You didn't even talk about it.
Well, it was literally just like, I was, you know, lifting. They were just like, stop losing weight. And we'd run and work out so much. So I would just have to pound carbs. It didn't matter. Like, they were like, go to McDonald's and eat as many burgers as you can. It's crazy.
Probably making everything worse.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's really, it's just, it's
well, most Western medicine too, like, they don't talk about nutrition, and there are certain foods that are inflammatory.
Right.
And like, if you have anything that's close to being autoimmune, like, probably not going to be good for you.
Right.
And they don't even, it's like, talk about it. It's all connected.
The study that I just got into is mainly around the gut. And,
oh, totally.
Really just incredibly interesting things that they told me about my health that no one had told me in since the 6 years or 7 years since I had these real issues. And in the first meeting with these people, they were like, oh, this sounds like, you know, you have a thing called leaky gut and these are the reasons. And
you're
and,
speaking our language.
No, it was unbelievable.
Tucker called me. He was like, you can say I told you so now.
Yeah. Cause she was always like, you know, these things matter. And I was like, yeah, maybe a little bit, but not, you know, fully. And still, I think I'm going to need some medicine, but like,
sure.
but these,
we'll set you up. We have lots of good information on leaky gut here at My Money.
No, I want it all.
We'll give it to you.
I just
this.
Did so many blood tests and stool tests and all these things. So, I'm going to get all that back in the next week and I'm actually, I'll let you know what they say.
Well, we know a lot of really amazing doctors here, so
yeah, I believe
happy
you.
To help. We do. They've all been in this chair.
That's cool.
But like a lot of people I know, same leaky gut, like it's all, and it just, a great line from my doctor, a guy who's been on this podcast, Frank Lippman, who's like an amazing functional medicine doctor. So like real doctor will prescribe medication and also say like, you need acupuncture also or change your diet. And one of my favorite lines from him is the gut is the second brain.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Like so much starts in the gut, specifically like leaky gut, autoimmune, and like everything.
It's like 80% of the immune system or something is in the gut.
Yeah. So going back to creativity, it sounds like work ethic. No, this is a good, this is a good segue. It's a good segue. So it sounds like work ethic is a big part of creativity.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think there's kind of two very extreme schools of thought. There's either you create when you feel like it, and like when the inspiration comes, then you show up. And then there's the
Which is true.
Yeah, but then you show up every day, and then you
inspiration comes. Frequently.
Yeah,
right.
And then when your inspiration comes, you're actually there working. So good thing you're there.
I think it's
to catch it.
There's
you know?
A great quote. I think it's Somerset Maugham. I may be wrong. It's something along the lines of like inspiration strikes every day precisely at 9 a.m.
That's funny.
It's like showing up, getting ready, and that's
part
of it.
But I think there's definitely wisdom in both, and I also think like we make all of our music together. It's super collaborative and we're usually like in the same room together the whole time. But we also do very different parts of it in a way. And like lyrics are really interesting because sometimes it is more like a when the inspiration strikes. And sometimes it is like I just show up.
But you also, what you do a lot is when the inspiration strikes, you'll like write down lyrics and poetry and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when the inspiration's striking and I'm making a beat or something,
it's already there.
Bring it in.
Yeah.
And so kind of just like keep it around.
But then, you know, it's like we'll have really great ideas like in the shower or like when we're, you know, having some kind of mental space and doing something else really does help a lot of the times when we have like a song that has a puzzle. But I think the most important thing about our creative process is just showing up every day. Or not every day, but most days.
Yeah.
So what is it, if you had to take a step back and be outside yourselves for a second, like what is it, do you think about you guys that makes you who you are? And I would say successful, you know, you've been nominated for Grammys. You've, you know, been in an Apple commercial. Like people would say like you guys, I know like success means a lot of things to different people, but like people would say like, you guys are doing it. You're artists, you're living your dream, you're touring, you're here. What is it? And a lot of people, you mentioned earlier, like there are a lot of people who are really talented, but it just doesn't happen, whether it's acting, music, art. So what is it about you guys that you think makes it happen?
It's a good question.
It's a hard one to
answer about yourself. I think one of the things is how hard we work and how much we don't take ourselves seriously, how much we take this job and career seriously.
That's true. And, you know, that isn't to say that we don't think that a lot of people don't work really, really hard. that maybe haven't gotten nominated for a Grammy. Like, that doesn't mean that they're not working hard. One other thing that I would say is having each other means that every single thing we do, we have to run by the other person. And the other person is very different. And in a way, there's...
Very honest.
And we can't... We don't compromise. We only do things when we're 100% really both excited about it, rather than one person being like, okay, fine. You know, we talk about it every day. We're like, thank goodness we have each other.
Yeah.
Because doing it on your own, you can just... You just don't have like a... Like a bullshit detector as readily available, or like a...
Yeah, it's scary thinking about that. We have a lot of friends who are solo artists, and the one, just how lonely it is.
Sure.
I mean, just the amount of things, like, we're, you know, just, you know, sitting in a hotel room, walking to sound check, being in the green room before the show. If you're doing those things alone,
yeah,
that you're in your head all day.
And everyone wants something from you, or yeah, trying to put something and wants you to grab you. Let's yeah, do this. Let's do that.
And if everyone says something's great, you don't have anyone next to you to be like, no,
nah, it's not that great.
It's not great. Like, you need to watch what the reasons
check
they're telling
yourself.
You it's great.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the things for sure. I think we got really lucky when we got a manager and put our team around us together. They're really good people who care about the right things and care about longevity, and aren't there for like the quick early money grabs, and care about our health and care about the message that we're sending to the world and keep us in check if we need it. I think that's really important. And I also just think us being so different is, I think, something that is unusual. Right. I just think a lot of people form bands with people that like the same genre, or like, you know, like, obviously, like, who would start a band with someone that you like don't have much overlap with? And I think that we're like creating a lane of overlap that we both love, and I think, you know, it sort of lands a little bit outside any other lane that exists, because I don't think one brain could make a lot of the stuff that we make. And I think that's special. But again, hard to talk about yourself like that. But
Do you think wellness makes you better? Focusing on being well?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Oh my gosh, we wouldn't, like...
We put a lot of focus on it.
Yeah.
Honestly. Sophie did more than I did at first. And then we've sort of realized how relevant it has been to my life. Almost like more relevant for... some real crazy, you know, health stuff, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, lack of wellness is really what like brought us together, you know, and we bonded over it. And so I think ever since then, like, we released our first song right when I got out of the wheelchair. And so our whole journey since we've really been a band has also been around how we bonded about, you know, not being well and dedicating ourselves to each other to help each other be well.
Sure.
Whether that's mental, emotional, physical, whatever. It's all really
all connected.
Connected and a part of it.
I've been taping Sophie's foot for the past like month. Before
you're like the trainer
trip.
On the road.
I'm literally
do you do
the
ice
trainer.
And stem too on her? And the heating? And
no. But I have her icing now.
Yeah.
I ice my knees and feet after every show and then do the Theragun. And we have her because she sprained her ankle at a show. So we have her. Was it at a show? I don't know. She's burning ankle.
It's a basketball injury.
I know. I knew how to tape.
I'm wearing basketball shoes
today. I was like,
today.
I actually know the taping. I'll also give you the Lodi taping so your plantar fascia is safe. She's like, what?
I'm like, I'll make you a smoothie.
Yeah.
What's it? Do you have a go-to? What's in your smoothie?
Ooh.
Tell them about the... So we just got a place in Los Angeles, and Sophie makes the best breakfast every morning.
it's an acai bowl. It just has, it depends on the day, actually.
Well,
but
just
usually
give them an example.
Acai and banana and spinach and avocado and celery and frozen cherries, frozen blueberries.
Almond butter.
Well,
granola.
Hemp seeds. Chia
I throw
seeds.
On some honey. She doesn't.
I love it.
Yeah, we have it. Like, our rider is just like the ingredients for an acai bowl, and then I bring the Nutribullet around.
I love to see it someday. We should. Our audience would love to see a healthy rider.
I'll take a picture. Maybe we'll have it today.
Do a little video of it.
Yeah, we should.
Share with us. We'll share it.
Yeah.
So, who do you guys admire from an artistic perspective, whether it's present or even past?
I am very obsessed with Alicia Keys right now. Ever since seeing her at the Grammys, she hosted the Grammys, and the way that she held space was so inspiring. She just was so at ease, and she began the whole Grammys holding hands with her sisters, with other women. And I think as a woman, seeing that kind of sisterhood and that kind of like matriarchy was one of the most memorable things I can recall. I mean, it was incredible. And then her artistry, I mean, the way she played the piano with two pianos, and the way that she just seems to have integrity no matter what. Her relationship with her husband just seemed really rad. Her relationship to herself seems really rad. I love everything about her.
I love it. What about you, Tucker?
I don't know. I respect a lot of very different type of artists. I think one person, I just rewatched an old concert of theirs. Oof. Is a guy named Stromae, who's a French artist, but he's Belgian, but he speaks in French. And you just got to check him out. He's like, he makes the most interesting music. He's the first artist who only makes music in French to headline Madison Square Garden. And Sophie and I actually went to that show with my dad before we started the band. And just the way he blew our minds, and the artistry and every single attention to detail. Like, he dresses all his crew members who are behind the stage, like you'd never see them, in his uniform. And then they all come out and like take a bow at the end, and they're all in the same uniform.
It's
just
incredible.
Like the attention to detail and the artistry of that guy just like blows my mind. So he's also like 6'6" and lanky. So.
I love it. Another tall man.
He's like a ballerina.
Yeah, I mean, he's like another. Incredible. Yeah, he's incredible. He's really cool. You should look him up, Stromae.
Oh, well, how do you spell it?
Stromae.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll check him out.
Yeah.
Any advice for aspiring artists out there?
My favorite advice is, I always say this, but make music you love. Like, make music that excites you. Too many people, I think, make music because they think it's like in, or they think people are going to like it, or like sounds like something else. And I would just say, if you make something that you really get excited about and love, I think you have a better shot.
Yeah, and I would say surround yourself with people who inspire you, who will lift you up, and who will tell you the truth. And take care of yourself as best you can.
That's just great life advice all around.
Yeah.
And,
it is.
And what if you guys could go back in time and give yourself advice as you were a newly minted band? What advice would that be?
Silence.
Yeah, it's a really good question.
I'm proud of a lot of decisions we've made. I think there's a couple things really early on before we had a manager or anything, like in the early process of making music, that I feel like a lot of artists go through. We've actually seen it with some other artists. But once you get to like the business part, like after you make a song, you kind of freak out and everyone wants their piece. And it's something when you're not comfortable with it and you don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And it's actually really complicated, the actual business behind a song and who owns a song and who owns the publishing and the master. It's actually confusing. And when you're really new at it, you can do things that aren't
fair.
Yeah.
Sure. The whole music as a business is notorious for being unfair and crazy.
Right.
And like the best, you know, I go back to, I think like the best in business were the Grateful Dead. It's like they owned like.
I mean, right. I'm really proud of the way that we've done business though, because we, you know, we have a lot of control. And
yeah,
even though we have like a label, we're independent in the United States, and in the rest of the world we have a label, but
it's just licensed to them though, so we own everything.
it is really, really nice. And we're really able to say, oh, well, we created the song. We really believe in it. We're going to put it out. And there's nobody saying, well, you know.
This doesn't fit on the radio.
Right. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, but, which is really nice.
But I'm even just talking about, like, with other, you know, working with other artists or yeah. other musicians. I think a couple times, you know, I ruined a friendship.
Yeah.
Sort of like on the first song we ever made, because we were like fighting about the stupidest little things that everyone was all uptight about because no one knew how to deal with these things. And so I think, one, having a good manager, you don't have to deal with that stuff. And two,
and a manager who we know, like, their moral compass is in the right place.
Right. And two, just, you know that relationships are more important in those situations than a couple percentages on a sure. song, yeah. no matter how big the song gets. Sure.
So what keeps you guys up at night, and what has you excited every morning?
The music keeps me up at night. I'll be thinking about it sometimes, or like these parties that we've been throwing, and I'll think about, like, oh man, like, just thought of a song that will go off. Like, I, you know, I don't know, I'll just like imagine. Like, I used to do the same exact thing as basketball. Sure. It's literally the same. I would, like, you know, picture myself in the game, you know, dunking on someone or like hitting a three. Yeah, I'd still just do the visualization. That keeps me up, unfortunately. Sometimes it puts me to bed, I guess.
I would say, unfortunately, this is, like, you know, an unsexy answer, but I think probably my health is, if I ever am kept up, it's usually my health. Like, either I feel bad physically, or I am worried about feeling worse.
Sure.
And it's like a really silly cycle. And
I'll get like a really long text yeah. of panic.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then I'll
seriously.
Call
I'm
her
like,
and be like, you're going to be fine.
I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to have a voice tomorrow. Like, I lost my voice today. Like that, like when we're touring, I get really, really anxious about my voice. Like when I get
sure.
sick. Cause that's just kind of like my worst nightmare, is showing up to like a show and just not being able to sing. But it's like, it's something I'm working through. But I don't actually stay up as much as I used to, but it's ironic cause I stayed up last night and I sent Tucker a long text last night.
Yeah.
So what has you excited every morning? You
wouldn't know. Oh my God. I like uncontrollably excited just for our lives. Like every day there is something so fun and something really exciting to do. But that's why I get so anxious about my health, is I don't want anything to stop me from all the stuff that we want to do. And it's such a privilege what we do. It's so fun and we have such a good time doing it. And I love it so much. I want to, you know, I want to always do it, and I don't want anything to hold me back.
Yeah, I agree. I also feel guilty sometimes about that, because I have a lot of friends and, you know, loved ones and family who don't get that. They don't get to wake up to that every day. You know, they don't. Most people don't
sure.
love what they do that much and get to have as much fun as us. So I think it's amazing, but yeah. it's also like, you know, really don't want to take it for granted, because I even feel bad about it sometimes. And then also just, I would say the things lately I've been waking up excited about is, like, we have a new song and a new video that, like, just mean a lot to us, and we're so excited
about
them.
Tell the people.
Oh, we're so excited.
It's called Fantasy. It comes out on March 22nd. I don't know when this is.
We'll make sure it airs after March 22nd.
And, yeah, it's just, you know, we're really excited about it. We've put a lot into it, and it's a long time coming, and, you know, these sort of little milestones of, you know, putting things out, or, you know, getting nominated for awards, or these little things are sort of fun little things that, yeah, the daily is amazing and sometimes exhausting and hard, but looking forward to these little things is always really
yeah,
fun.
Kind
like
of,
Coachella,
yeah.
like that's something, you know, you look
we're
forward
to. We're kind of
to.
In the process right now of creating a new world, like a new phase of our world. And so we've been just like really excited recently about the new songs and the new, like, we have a whole new kind of visual landscape for it. And so we just came up with, you know, some titles and some concepts, and just the feeling of creating a whole world and watching it come alive. And then every day waking up and getting to kind of like add another brick to it is like the most deeply satisfying thing I can imagine, really.
Well said. Well said.
I love that.
So my last question, as you're sort of talking about the future, like, how do you guys think about the future? Like, where do you see yourselves, like, a year from now, 3 years? I think anything past 3 years is very hard. But like, like, do you even think about, like, where do you guys want to be musically? Where do you want to be? Just what does that look like for you?
I definitely want to be at a point where...
1 year or 3 years?
Either one, whatever you're comfortable
okay.
with, or both.
What? I don't know. Let's do 2 years.
No, 1 and 3. Do one. All right. Go one. Quick.
What's your answer?
Okay, in 1 year.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, I was going to say I would love to be in a place where it's clear the world that we're creating and our music and what we're doing stands for something much larger than just like Sophie and Tucker. Like, I want for this feeling that we get when we do our shows of that room of people who just come alive and just, I think there needs to be more places of joy and inclusivity and kindness in the world right now. And if our music could be kind of like a haven for that and shining more light on the joy of the world instead of just like all the shitty stuff that's happening every day, that would be my dream, is to feel like we're part of a movement that's building, that there is more joy and is more sort of like people feeling together and happy and hopeful and, you know, all the good stuff. I would love for our music to be really a part of that movement.
Amen to that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that could go for any years from now.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the sooner the better. I think the world needs it. Yeah, I like that answer.
Nice.
All right, we'll leave it at that. Sophie, Tucker, two amazing human beings, incredible artists. Check out everything they do, guys. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.